Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Back to The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
And a radio brought to you by Jamba, your local Jamba. Life is better blended. I want to thank Jamba, Steve, and the team there for their support of this radio show, their support of college athletes in the state of Oregon. And you'll be hearing all about Jamba and all the way up to college football season and beyond as we do interviews on this show. We'll be visiting in a few minutes with Bonnie Jill Laughlin, who is a sports broadcaster, a TV personality, an author. She became an NBA scout. She is the first woman to dance at the professional level for three different teams in two different professional sports. She was a Golden State Warriors dancer, a San Francisco 49ers dancer or cheerleader, member of the Gold Rush there, and a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader. She's now written a book, and the book is out, and it has kind of an interesting... It's an interesting time, and it's a good time, like great timing, to write a book about that celebrates women and female firsts in sports. And we're talking about Billie Jean King, Danica Patrick, Jackie Joyner Kersee, Layla Ali, Mary Lou Retton. Man, I grew up watching that Olympics. I was a kid, but watching that Olympics when Mary Lou Retton captured America. Now I'm watching Caitlin Clark, and I've got three daughters. They are jazzed about watching the women's Final Four, which we're carrying on this station. Tomorrow we'll have the women's Final Four games. Here's Caitlin Clark talking about the interest in the women's tournament.
I don't know. There's been like a lot of little moments, I think. I think just the crowds at our games, but also just like the people screaming and like wanting our autographs, like people just scream my name constantly, and I think that's something that really never gets old or something you never take for granted. I think even like when you're out and about, like doing your own things, living your personal life, the people that come up to you and like really support your team and understand the game, I think that's the coolest thing. But I think also just in general, like the excitement around this tournament, like it's super cool. Like people are more excited about the women's side than the men's side, and I think that's obviously something that's really never been the case before, and it's cool to see how it's evolved. Like when I first started this when I was a freshman, like we couldn't even use the March Madness branding, and now to see this, and really it's just taken a whole nother level, and I expect it to continue to grow this year, and I think that's the coolest thing for myself.
Caitlin Clark, Iowa in action tomorrow as part of the Final Four. Our guest, Bonnie Jill Laughlin, trailblazer, really. NBA scout, dancer, model, actress, media member, author now. She's written a book. It's called In a League of Her Own, Celebrating Female First in Sports. Bonnie Jill Laughlin joining us. Bonnie Jill, how are you?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
You bet. I got to start with your name. I'm going to guess, Bonnie Jill, what's the reason for two first names?
Well, most of my family is from the South and from, I'm actually in Texas now, I moved back to Texas, but my dad wanted Bonnie and my mom wanted Jill. They ended up doing Bonnie Jill is my first name. Jill is not my middle name because people always think it's a middle name. And it's funny, it's almost taken on my personality of having where I've got, you know, my two split personalities being like the tomboy and then also being like the feminine side of me. So it kind of shows the different layers of myself just like through my name.
I don't know anybody who's more qualified to talk about a variety of different sports than you. You've been around it your whole life. And, you know, I'm even told by our researchers that you do barrel racing. And so you've grown up kind of with that background. And I want to get into all of it. But the timing of this book, In a League of Her Own, is perfect. I mean, the book is out and you've got like this women's Final Four has just been nothing short of amazing.
Oh, it's been fantastic. And just like Caitlin said, just like Shaquille O'Neal has said, This is the first time, John, I'm more into the women's basketball Final Four. I shouldn't say Final Four. The entire March Madness more than the men's. I mean, of course, you have your bracket, and of course you watch, but it really has taken its own life and showcased these women. And how many people would say that they'd ever think that they'd be watching the women's basketball over the men's? And I think that's the case for everyone. It's been so exciting. The only thing I wish is probably that you would have had LSU and Iowa and actually the national championship game. You know, that's a little disappointing, but still, just to see that, you know, I'm excited to watch the game tomorrow with UConn and Iowa. And it's just been such a fun thing to watch. And like you said, the timing of my book has just been so perfect. It, you know, makes me think, yes, I do need to do a second book, because I really would love Caitlin to be in my book as my chapter one, kind of like how Billie Jean King is my chapter one in my book now, because she has just really moved the needle. She's made such a big difference, and she really encompasses exactly what my why was and what I wanted to do when it, you know, came to women in sports.
What made you write the book? Was there a conversation you had or an interview you did, or has that been on your mind a while? What sort of drove that?
Yeah, John, there's been, you know, a long time where I've wanted to do a book, and so many times publishers asked me about doing a book, but they wanted to be a memoir and a tell-all about my time with the Lakers, my time with the Cowboys, and I was like, no, I'm not doing that. That's something where it's going to be gossipy and train-wrecky, and they're like, yeah, we love that. I'm like, no, I want to do a book that's empowering and, you know, inspiring, aspiring, and I just saw that there wasn't one book that had for younger women to see, a book that encompassed all the different females, not just a one-off of each girl, but actually showing that maybe not just as an athlete, a female athlete, Olympian, but also in a front office, a ref, a coach, you name it, owner, that there were so many layers of women in sports, and it wasn't just, you know, that one-dimensional thinking how you could be there, and that there was a space for, you know, everyone. I wanted to resonate with the different ladies, and there wasn't a book that, you know, that professors and teachers could use to show that there was the trailblazers and pioneers who started it all.
What I think is cool is, you know, I have been in a lot of press boxes, and yeah, of course I've talked to scouts, and you've been an NBA scout, and I've talked to other media members, and you're a media member. But what I didn't expect is that, you know, if you look down at the sideline at a 49er game, there's the Gold Rush, and Bonnie Jill, you were a cheerleader for the 49ers and a Dallas Cowboys and a dancer for the Warriors. And my mind wouldn't have thought Gold Rush cheerleader writes this great book about Billie Jean King and Layla Ali, and that's shame on me, right? But at that time when you were cheerleading, were you thinking in these terms then, or is this something that came to you later?
No, I was that kid right out of the womb that didn't want the typical, you know, I wasn't looking at bridal magazines and wanting to get married, John. I was like, okay, what do I need to do to end up owning the Dallas Cowboys? You know what I mean? Like, I was so different, and my dad didn't understand, like, why is this little girl asking me about why do the guys get time to run the 40, you know, and why, you know, what college did he go to? And tell me about, you know, minor league ball. And so there was something that was different. I was reading the Sporting News, the Green, every single morning, you know, looking at that. I was handicapping horses because my dad owned racehorses, so I knew how to bet at like 5 years old. I was going and betting horses. So I was just different. You know, when you have a kid who's handicapping horses and looking at, you know, how to score a baseball game, I just was different. And I think that just the dancing was a way for me to get into the sports arena and have the best seats in the house. And I started, you know, with the Warriors and then went on to the Niners and Dallas Cowboys, but I was very young while I was going to college as well. But then, you know, obviously I was able to translate that into being in a front office and then in media, but it was always my goal to have a career in sports and to, you know, be able to pivot, because as you know, it's like to have longevity, you can't just be one dimensional. I like to have different layers of myself. So whether it is being in the front office or being in the media, or, you know, and when you're in the media, being able to produce, be able to edit, be able to shoot, and, you know, whatever it may be, that I knew that I could do it all, because I think that makes you more valuable.
You're a Renaissance woman. I mean, you've done it all. And I got to ask you, NBA scout, what don't we know about life as an NBA scout?
No, it's not glamorous at all, because I think some people think because I was fortunate enough to be with the Los Angeles Lakers and to be with the dynasty and be with them for 5 championship rings and get 5 rings. But being on the road in the middle of the night, landing in, I don't know where I'm at, renting a car and then driving at, you know, 2 a.m. trying to figure out where to find a certain arena, and being able to go all over the place and scouting. It wasn't glamorous. It was, especially in the beginning for me, it was really tough because I was trying to fit in and be one of the boys. So I would, you know, go into places and wearing the baggy Jordan sweats and throw my hair up in a ball cap, no makeup, you know, just so people would perceive me differently. Oh, not that I was some cheerleader or model or whatever, but that I was taken seriously. And then B. Shaw, who was Brian Shaw, one of our coaches at the time, he's like, you know what, Phil Jackson has you doing this for a reason. You know, Mitch Kupchak, Jeannie Buss, the late Dr. Jerry Buss, just have confidence in the fact that you're knowledgeable. You know how to break down the triangle offense. You know, lead with that and stop worrying about people trying to accept you because you're a female. Or not accept you, I should say, rather.
What don't we know about life as an NBA dancer or an NFL cheerleader?
We get no money. I was a cheerleader for the Dallas Cowboys. I made $15 a game, and that was tax. So I think it was $13. We didn't get tickets, so we had to pay for our own tickets. Well, we all know you couldn't get a ticket for $13, even back in the 90s. So you were actually making no money. You wanted to buy tickets, you know, for the game as well. So that was really, you know, a stepping stone. And for me, I loved being able to perform, and you know, especially for the Dallas Cowboys, and, you know, end up becoming very close to the Jones family, who ended up being mentors for me going on and moving into different places. But networking and meeting so many people, I loved dancing and cheering, but it wasn't something you could make a career out of. But it was something I definitely used to jumpstart my career in sports. And it was a great time in my life, but it was something I knew I needed to move on because I wanted to be able to eat something more than just, you know, top ramen.
Right. In a League of Her Own is the book. Bonnie Jill Laughlin is the author. She's with us. Yeah, I mean, it's clear, it's evident. You use that networking, and good for you. There's a lot of kids that are that age, and I call you kids, but like when you're in your early 20s, you don't quite know how the world works, but you are around a lot of people who did. And so what gave you the confidence to sort of bridge those relationships with people like the Jones family and obviously the Lakers organization and others?
I think it was instilled in me at a young age. My parents, my mom had me write written notes. So when I'd meet people, I'd write a written note. I still write written notes today and send it because I knew that goes a long way. And remember people's birthdays and just, you know, you just develop those relationships and you start to realize that, you know, you obviously have to have the talent and be able to have that work ethic, but you also, it does help when you have people that are in your corner and that can help you get to the next level and believe in you. And like for the Lakers, when I worked for the Lakers that first year, you know, I was basically an intern. I didn't get paid for that entire year. I was still working as media, you know, proved it that I could do it. And then I was able to sign a 5-year deal and a 5-year deal. So that work ethic was so important, but the relationships were just as important as well.
Did you ever sign a player who made it in the NBA?
Yeah, Jordan Farmar. I don't know if you remember Jordan Farmar. He was a So
UCLA kid.
Then Taft High, which was Los Angeles as well. So he was a local boy, and still usually like really big guards, you know, high basketball IQ. And he wasn't sure about Jordan, and you know, I kind of kept pushing Jordan Farmar, and Jordan ended up playing for us and winning 2 championship rings. So it was nice to see, but it was tough because while I was scouting, we also had really late draft picks because we were winning, right? So we didn't get a lottery pick, or, you know, so it was tough, and Phil was very, very picky about who he liked. So there were guys that you may like, but if it was an undersized guard, you know, or as a guard that's used to running a, you know, fast tempo offense, you wasn't going to like him. So like, if you look at a Luke Walton, you know, Luke will kill me for saying this, but he probably wouldn't have made it as long as he did in the NBA. But because of the triangle, it was such a perfect offense for him, and D. Fish and so many of these guys that it really, that triangle worked so well. I know a lot of organizations hate, you know, running it, but it really worked for a lot of players and these role players that end up, you know, with the 5 rings after that.
We're always looking at championship level teams and then maybe some teams that struggle, and you've been around winners, and you've probably been around some teams that weren't that good. What do you see it as far as culture with winning organizations that you know, if we're just talking about, hey, we're striving to add these ingredients because we want the franchise to be the best it can be. What things pop to your mind?
I think the first thing when you mention that is, you know, the greatness, you know, for the Lakers organization or the Dallas Cowboys, you had players that mediocrity was not an option. When you're looking at a Kobe Bryant, and right after he won the championship against Boston or Orlando or New Jersey, he was in the gym the next day shooting jumpers. We just won, you know, and I'm going over to the facility and he's there, you know, and, you know, he kind of set a precedent, and that greatness, that work ethic is so important. And yeah, I don't think that's something that you end up working your way through. I think the work ethic is something that you're fiery, you're hungry for, you're kind of born with that. And it's hard to kind of make up that DNA of someone who wants to win even after you just won a championship. And I think the Lakers and the Cowboys and the 49ers, all the teams I was with, you know, it was always having those great people around, the Jerry Rices and the Troy Aikmans and, you know, Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith. It's like they all were never happy with just winning one. They always wanted to win more. And that's hard to find, but it was having those type of players in that front office and the coaching staff that had that same mentality.
You know, it's not hard right now to look around and find women who are now working in prominent positions in the NFL, like Amy Trask and in Major League mm-hmm. Baseball. And clearly this Final Four this weekend is going to be a celebration of that. And what does that mean to you personally as a kid who grew up around sports, and now maybe there's a generation of kids coming along now who can look up and see people in those positions?
I love that. And that's why I wrote my book. And when I do these signings and I look through my messages on social media, I'm getting mothers and daughters and so many different women, you know, not just in the younger generation, but even, you know, older ladies who are saying, oh my gosh, I never knew that there was a space for me in sports. And you know, even at any age, and being able to have this book to show that there is a space for you. And if there isn't, you know, someone in that space, make it, create it, be that first person, you know. And so you see all the ladies, like you mentioned, Amy Trask and, you know, Mary Lou and Danica Patrick and Layla Ali and all the women that were the first that are in my book. And I wanted to highlight the ones that are the legends, but I also wanted the hidden gems like Manon Raume, who's the first female to play in an NHL hockey game, and Julie Crown, who's the first female to win a Breeders' Cup as a jockey. And there were just so many different women that I wanted to highlight that didn't have the social media when they were at the top of their game. Or Jackie Joyner Kersee, there's a younger generation who definitely doesn't know who she is. And so it was really important for me to have a book where it was obviously the legends, but also the women that are the first that you didn't know about.
I think it's great that you've written the book. It's perfect timing. Did you see this coming, or did you just say, I'm writing it, and then as the college basketball season's unfolding, you go, oh my gosh, this is going to be great?
Yeah, it worked out perfect. Like I said, it took almost 3 years to get a publisher to sign on because they wanted to have the tell-all book that I wouldn't do. And so finally, Roman and Littlefield, the publisher, said, yes, we love this. We understand your why. And then it's, you know, I had 9 months to write it, and it was really tough to try to figure out everyone that I wanted to put in my book. And now looking, you know, of course, Caitlin Clark, you know, Katie Ledecky, who will probably, you know, be amazing in the Olympics. Everyone talks about Michael Phelps. Well, Katie Ledecky, she blows him out of the water, literally, when it comes to how many gold medals she has. So there's so many women that are, you know, just starting to people to understand what they've done, and they've been doing it for so long. So my timing was perfect, and it's nice to see that they're both men and women are on board with women in sports, because it's tough. You know, there's a lot of scrutiny when you're a female in sports in any capacity, and you're having to work harder and prove yourself. And there's no room for error when you're a woman in sports. So that people don't realize the pressure that is on women. And so I think it's starting to come and shed some light right now.
I think for you in particular, though, because you know, in your early life are a dancer for the Warriors, you're Gold Rush, you're Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, you're in magazines, you're on the cover, you're on Baywatch, right? You're on Baywatch, is that right?
Yeah, back
okay.
in the day, yep.
Okay, so you're on all this stuff, and then, you know, you have to walk in there and you want to be taken seriously, and I think mm-hmm. you walk in, all that other stuff walks in the room with you.
Oh, absolutely. That was on my back, you know, all the time of that she just stopped cheering and then went right into scouting. And it's like, no, I was working at it for a while. And but there was, a lot of that stereotype, and stereotypes are in place for a reason, right? So I really had to prove myself that, yes, I still embrace where I came from. I wasn't hiding any of that. There's still to this day, you see, I don't hide any of that. I show that, you can be an attractive female and also be knowledgeable and credible. And it does take a little longer sometimes, but I didn't, make any shortcuts. And I was just, authentic to who I was, but also was able to prove myself. And, I've been, in this industry for a long time now, and I've shown that there's a lot of sacrifices. And I think with me and Kobe Bryant, he was a mentor to me, and Kobe said, like, when someone had wrote a hit piece on me, in the Boston Globe about me being a scout, he was like, this is good. You want naysayers. You want haters. He's like, it's good because it'll fuel you. And it did. And to this day, it's like, oh, bring it on. You say I can't do this, I will prove you wrong. And so that's, I think, how I've gone through my whole career.
I love it. Bonnie Jill Laughlin, In a League of Her Own is the book. You can get it on Amazon, your local book retailer. It really does celebrate all of the female firsts in sports. All right, before I let you go, why not do the tell-all book? There's certainly going to be a big advance there. They're going to want the dirt on the Cowboys, Michael Irvin. They're going to want you to talk about the Lakers and what that locker room was like and what life as a cheerleader was like. And why not do the tell-all book?
I can name it in just one word, integrity. I would never – I don't think you'd offer me millions of dollars, which I've gotten pretty close to how much they've offered me to do something like that. A lot of those – guys are my friends. I just would never do something like that again. I don't think that, of course, yeah, it's gonna be a bestseller and be, make a ton of money, but that's not why I do things. I do things to make a difference and to, like I said, to inspire and to empower, and that's not gonna empower anyone.
I grew up around some farmers and cowboys and the barrel racers, some of the toughest people that you can meet. Are you still barrel racing?
I am. It's funny you say that. I grew up on a horse ranch, and my dad had race horses, and then I was a barrel racer, and actually working for the Cowgirl Channel covering rodeo the past year, and breakaway and barrel racing. And I've got my little mare, my quarter horse mare Palomino, that I run barrels on. And that's a, as you said, cowgirls, we're not scared of anything. And, you just jump on a horse and you go, and you go fast and you turn fast. And it's a big adrenaline for me getting on my mare and doing that.
Bonnie Jill Laughlin, I appreciate you. Thanks for giving us some of your time. Wish you the best. Good luck with the book.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
You bet. There she goes. In a League of Her Own is the name of the book. You can check it out. I'm looking at it on Amazon right now. It's very early. It's just out. It's got 13 ratings, 5 stars. Bonnie Jill Laughlin's done a nice job with the book. Leave it here.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.